Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Another busy week in the news with some very big stories. Still developing new threats against Capitol Hill and a hearing that raised a lot of questions about the January 6th insurrection, the COVID relief bill, and the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. And sexual harassment allegations. And guess what? We're just getting started. My guests tonight are Mary C. Curtis, columnist for The Roll Call, and Eva McKend, Washington correspondent for Spectrum News. Lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR. Or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Eva and Mary, good to have you on the program, joining the conversation. Boy, we've got a lot to talk about this week, I got to tell you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
So let's first talk about the threat that today, March 4th, there were rumors that there was going to be yet some other kind of demonstration of force, violence from Trump supporters, and that former President Trump would be swept back into power, and that the Capitol Police have asked that some of the 5,200 National Guard now serving around the Capitol should remain for another 60 days. Mary, January 7th wasn't the end. March 4th seems to be just the end of the beginning.
It really does. I mean, they didn't meet today because of the threats. And the thing of it is, it wasn't the end because you still have so many Republicans not saying the simple fact that Joe Biden was elected president. You saw Donald Trump make his triumphant return at the CPAC conference, the Conservative Political Action Conference, repeating again the lie that he was elected. And you have so many of his followers still believing it. And then, of course, you had the hearings this week when the FBI director, Chris Wray, that Trump appointed, insisting and talking about the threat of domestic terrorism, which is primarily white supremacist groups, that's not going away. They have, he said, over 2,000 cases that they're chasing. And you still had so many of the Republican lawmakers trying to deflect rather than protect and talking about trying to pivot to Black Lives Matter and making all these other claims. And so, as you said, it is January 6th was the beginning because we don't see leaders, people who should be leaders, facing the truth, putting the big lie behind, and they're still encouraging these folks. And some of the revelations this week were very shocking. The police saying that they couldn't get the National Guard to be called out. It was delayed. There's so many more questions than answers still about what happened. And what threats are in the future.
You know, Eva, Major General William Walker said during the Senate hearing yesterday that he was frustrated. He had 155 members of the National Guard sitting on buses. He was, ready to go, but he did not have the authority to have this happen because he did not hear from the Pentagon for 3 hours and 19 minutes. He was incredulous. I think a lot of people are.
That's right. General Walker said his chain of command prevented him from sending forces out immediately and that basically his hands were tied. You know, Harold, this is, as they say, it all comes out in the wash. Well, this is the process. And as we see these officials continue to testify before Congress, we'll continue to get a better sense of where the security breakdowns were. But he says he got the call from then Capitol Police Chief Sun, but did not have the go-ahead from the Pentagon to act. And what we saw, of course, was one of the biggest national security failures since 9/11. Now, for its part, the Defense Department says Capitol Police did not request help from the military in advance, and that city officials had only asked for guard troops for traffic and crowd control, and that the call should have been made sooner, and that they acted as quickly as they could.
You know, one of the things, being somewhat of a student of military history, the United States military has had a reputation of being very mobile. Okay. And that was not the case based on that discussion yesterday during that Senate hearing. And it just seems to me, and you said it all comes out in the wash, I would argue it all comes out in Washington. But it just seems to me that that eventually we are going to see what kind of politics are at play if indeed we hear from the key players at the Pentagon, because one of the deputy secretaries who was testifying yesterday, he had no answers. He wasn't on the call. He wasn't part of the process.
That's right. That's right. We heard that supposedly top Army generals were concerned about the optics, but we haven't heard from those generals as yet. I will add that a lot of organizers, a lot of progressives have said, well, if it were Black Lives Matter protesters that breached the Capitol, for instance, the response would have been a lot more swift. And it was interesting to me that General Walker kind of spoke to this.
Mm-hmm.
This week he said that actually that the way that they responded to the protests last summer may have actually prevented them. He suggested it may have prevented them from acting sooner, that the incidents with helicopters, as we all heard, flying above all of our heads well into the night, the spy planes, all of those measures that they took last year that some would describe as overboard, that maybe that was the reason why they were so cautious in this episode, because they were so heavily criticized for how they responded to prior events.
Yeah.
But you still have so many questions. I mean, the fact, you're right, if it had been African-Americans, if it had been Muslims, or any of that, you can imagine it would have been different. And also, you know, there's these facts that keep coming out, that first it was denied that Michael Flynn's, former retired general Michael Flynn's brother was involved, but then it turns out Lieutenant General Charles Flynn was one of the folks who was there and may have argued against deploying troops. What surprises me is that we still don't have as much information as we really should of something that was so serious, mm-hmm, as the January 6th insurrection. And then you have, as I say, some members of Congress who seem that they don't want to have a 9/11 style commission, and they don't want to do more investigations. Some were even saying, well, you know, do we want to look into some people's backgrounds? Will that be a First Amendment issue? And you can best be sure that you know, if it were someone else, that they would be looking into everybody's backgrounds. And so, you know, we still don't know. I don't think who planted the bombs at the DNC and the RNC, and they're still looking into the deaths of the police officer. So I just think, as you said to start the segment, that it is only beginning.
And, you know, one of the things, just to drill down just a little bit more about this, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson he's been doing a lot of gaslighting, as well as Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, you know, those three musketeers for the Republican Party. Even, and we get the politics. I understand the politics, but at some point one would expect that there would be a point where either they're going to rise above this or at least try to be silent when you're talking about the trying to sell that this was Antifa or that these were, you know, perpetrators, but not really Trump supporters. And even though this has been going on pretty much since 2016, I remain fascinated that that even when the experts, the people who have been doing this their entire careers, are saying, like the FBI director, yes, no Antifa, or some of the other folks who are in the trenches are saying, you know, pretty much the same thing. This was domestic terrorism. It just amazes me.
And the people who were there themselves are testifying why they were there, and they have their own records of being involved in these far-right militia groups, Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, white supremacist groups. And as you say, I mean, Ron Johnson even said at one point it was a group of jovial, you know, protesters just kind of out for the afternoon, and anybody with eyes could see that wasn't the case. And these folks, like Chris Wray, they are Republicans who were appointed by Republicans. So you can't say that they are trying to skew the story in one way or the other.
Yeah. Eva?
Yeah, that's right. I think that they are making a political decision when they continue to advance the big lie, and that they are really worried about the implications for their own political futures if they vary and stray from that talking point. But they do continue to sort of be coy. Oh, do we really know who it was? It could have been Antifa. It could have been infiltration of Trump supporters. We know that it's not. The intelligence officials are disputing that, but they continue to say these things, and you have to think that it's for political reasons.
Without a doubt. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots and lots to discuss. This has been an extremely busy week in the news. If you want to get in on the conversation again, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to move on to where we are with the COVID relief bill. Now, in the Senate, and as we have always known, even with some of the compromises that President Biden has agreed to, it still is facing a very steep climb, Eva.
That's right. Every word of the 682-page stimulus bill is currently being read aloud by the clerks on the Senate floor. The House version included a raise to the federal minimum wage that has already been stripped out of the Senate version. And Senate Democrats had to make other concessions just to keep all of the senators on board for this. So Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema advocated for the $1,400 stimulus checks to phase out quicker than they did in the House version of the bill. And President Biden, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, had to go along with this in order to keep them in line, because it doesn't look like, as of now, any Republicans are going to support this nearly $2 trillion stimulus package, even though it includes very popular provisions like the stimulus checks I mentioned, but also the child tax credit and expanded unemployment benefits. They are not going to support this bill.
Mary, talk to me a little bit more about the politics of this, because even before this passed out of the House, it would appear to me that a lot of these provisions that Eva was just talking about would indeed help a great many of the constituencies of the Republicans who voted against it.
Well, yes. I mean, and there, of course, the clock is ticking, because in March 14th, I believe, the current enhanced employment benefits will expire. So, yes, and polls show that it is popular. At the same time, the Republicans, of course, everything is political, and they are going to try to make the case that this bill has a lot of things in it that actually have nothing to do with COVID relief. And it's filled with things that the Democrats just want to put through and that they aren't necessary. And so they'll say, you know, pet projects and these kinds of things, because their eye, of course, is on the 2022 midterms. So they're going to try to make that case that these are things that have nothing to do with it. But it's going to be difficult, because people can understand checks in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are hurting right now. And even though we are getting closer with the vaccine, we still aren't there yet. And, you know, there's still a lot of people are out of work and their businesses are suffering. And they're home with the kids, and they would want this relief going to schools, going into their pockets. So it's going to be hard for the Republicans in some sense to spin this. But, of course, they'll try to by saying, oh, this is blue state bailout. You know, there's a lot of pork in here, this and that.
But to
it's
that,
also a subjective assessment, right? You know, if just because, you know, Republicans argue only 9% of it is COVID-related, well, what's to say funding maybe for some kind of arts initiative that that program could have suffered or that entity could have suffered due to COVID-related losses? So it's kind of hard to really quantify and characterize what is COVID, what's not COVID. Exactly. So that is a bit of a, I think, a subjective. It's subjective when you think about it.
202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week, and there are some doozies that we are sharing with you again. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Eva, you did make an excellent point. Even if on the surface some of those programs or funding measures would be for things that do not immediately suggest that they are COVID related. You can just look at the local news and see how some, you know, non-restaurant businesses are impacted, you know, arts centers, other entertainment venues. Those people are out of work. And,
that's right.
Yeah, and they do need assistance. In some cases, not just to keep them afloat, but keep some of the larger venues from closing permanently, so that when we do get out of this, some rehiring can happen.
Exactly. COVID has touched every aspect of our lives, so it's hard to delineate what hasn't been impacted by COVID. I will also note that.
Well, hold that point. Hold your point. I don't want you to forget it. But I've got to take a really quick break. We're at the Reporters Roundtable, and this discussion will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. We continue this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the top stories of the week. My guests are Mary C. Curtis, columnist for Roll Call, and Eva McKend, Washington correspondent for Spectrum News. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Eva, go ahead and make your point.
Yes, I was just going to say that Senate Republicans, because these provisions in the bill are so popular, another messaging strategy has been really to focus on school closures, on reopening schools. Democrats don't want your schools open. That has been something that they have been holding news briefings on all week. They've really been focusing on that. And not so much the bill, because the bill is so popular. So that's another strategy I think they've deployed as we see the bill so popular across the country.
Even as the Biden administration has said, we need to move teachers to the top of the vaccination list so that we can get schools open on a massive scale more quickly.
Yes, but even that's complicated because, you know, certain schools, they have to also make the schools ready for it. Some of the older schools in some areas don't have the correct ventilation, and they need help, you know, basically making the school ready to bring the kids back. And so even that is a complicated issue.
Yeah, indeed it is. Let me go to the phone lines. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lloyd, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me. I just want to say, I want to cut to the chase. The Republicans are not going to support anything that's Democratic. I know President Biden is trying to get Republicans that he knows get on his side. But they want to hold to this Trump line. It's us against you. And Mr. Biden, we have some what we call fake Democrats, this guy Manson from West Virginia, and there's somebody else walking. These are people running on the Democratic Party line, but they're really inwardly Republicans, you know. They don't really want to support people, you know. Democrats usually want to help people. Republicans want to put all the money in their pockets.
Okay.
And that's where it goes. And they're not going to support it. And President Biden just has to go along with what we have and get those Democrats out of the way who don't want to be Democrats. And let's put some Democrats in there who want to be real Democrats. And let's move on with the program, because we've got a lot of important issues to push forward. And he's moving real slow now, trying to bring in these Republicans who don't really want to go in. They all want to be Trumpites and, you know, just follow Trump. And so let's let them stay in their pits, and we will move on progressively.
Lloyd, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Mary, is he right?
Well, the frustration you hear from Lloyd is what you're hearing from a lot of Democratic progressives. Of course, that's why they're pushing to get rid of the filibuster, because they're saying that so much of the agenda of the Biden-Harris administration will be stopped by Republicans. They can, that they won't let him get things done, and they're looking towards some of the things that happened during the Obama administration when they frustrated some of those policies, and that's why there's a pressure to do that. Now, some they can get by with the reconciliation process, where you'll see 50-50, and then now Vice President Kamala Harris will break the tie. But as Lloyd said, you do have folks like Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Kristen Sinema of Arizona, who also aren't positively Democratic votes that you can depend on. Though it's interesting, because folks like John Tester in Montana, who also wins in a very red state, does not seem to be playing that same kind of politics that Joe Manchin is.
Yeah, I was about to say the same exact thing. You know, Montana solidly, a red state, and yet, you know, Tester, he would be considered, you know, a maverick, you know, a Democratic maverick in a red state, kind of like, you know, Sinema in a red state, and she's kind of purple.
Well, I mean, that's why. Now we're going to talk later about these voting laws.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to mention. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Miss, calling from Maryland, what's on your mind? Miss, go right ahead.
It's like, basically, people are robbing from Peter to pay Paul, or Peter Pan Paul, whichever way you want to put it and stuff. I tried to tell you this before when we had this conversation, but I think we were talking about prison or something like that, or people getting an electric chair or whatever and stuff. Like I said, only God can judge you. But anyway and stuff, what I'm looking at is that this is just a mess, okay? This, to me, this is regular people playing like they Trump people or whatever, that's trying to get what they're getting from these government agencies and stuff is all involved. And that's including your mayors, too.
Okay.
I have been here, done this, and did this. I have been through the ringer and back, won the cases and stuff, and I'm going through it again, just like I tried to explain to you before.
Well, thank you, miss, for explaining again. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots of stories to talk about. Two more issues on Capitol Hill. Of course, it's the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, passed, the House yesterday, also, the Voting Rights Act. Oh, man, it's deja vu all over again, Eva. It just seems like, particularly as it relates to the Voting Rights Act, allow me to be naive. Shouldn't we be beyond this already, and yet it just seems that there are political entities that are just trying to roll back history some 50 years or so.
Yes, Harold, many would argue that. And, you know, you mentioned the Justice and Policing Act and H.R. 1, the voting rights legislation that passed the House this week. And House Democrats, they have the majority, so these things are going to pass the House. They're arguably progressive policies that many Democrats champion. The Justice and Policing Bill is wide-ranging legislation that includes things like banning no-knock warrants and mandating data collection on police encounters. What I will say, though, is I think that if Democrats, beyond sort of sending a message, right, having these messaging bills, but if they really wanted something to pass in the Senate, from the House to the Senate and then become law, they would do standalone bills. Why not try to just pass a bill all by itself banning no-knock warrants? Why not try to pass a bill all by itself redirecting funding to community-based policing programs? I think that that would actually be a more effective way that Democrats, beyond sending a message, could actually make policy.
Is that what do you think about that, Mary? I mean, on the face of it, sounds like a good idea. But are they, as Eva is suggesting, are they just trying to cram too much in, you know, in one bill? Would it even a one issue bill, would that slow things down even more? Even as they try to, you know, take out 20 things and just have a one issue bill?
Well, they can try to do that. Some people might, you know, allude to the whole Charlie Brown and the football and Lucy, that they will make all of these compromises, and then at the last minute they still won't vote for it. They do, but that is something that they could do to try to make a bargain. It seems like, as far as the policing bill is concerned, Republicans seem especially unhappy with the piece taking away the qualified immunity for police officers, for them to be held accountable. They are arguing that it will keep them from doing their jobs. And so that is a piece of it. And they do have the Chauvin trial, the police officer in the George Floyd case, coming up next week.
It starts on Monday.
While that is in the spotlight, that would be a time to shine a light and to see if something can be done while people are thinking about this issue. I think the voting issue is more complicated because you have this conservative Supreme Court that looks to be willing to let many of these restrictive voting laws coming from the states get a pass. And they are really, it seems that many people, rather than let the people pick, the voters pick the politicians, they want to pick their voters and put in these restrictions that some state courts have knocked down. I know in North Carolina, their restrictive law was knocked down, but you're going to see more and more of them, particularly in states like Arizona and Georgia, that went for the Democrat. And now each of them have two Democratic senators, and so Republicans are going to fight back at that. That's why Democrats are saying it's imperative to get some kind of federal legislation, or else, you know, Republicans are thinking with voting laws and redistricting and gerrymandering, they might be able to win back the House and the Senate without really changing the vote much, just kind of with these laws. So that's going to be a real fight.
Well, and you know, and to that point, and it kind of goes back to the rollback to, you know, 50 or 60 years ago. But let's just, maybe we can just talk about, you know, 5 or 10 years ago or so, when we saw more states talking about, you know, more of the red states pursuing restrictive voting, you know, voter ID laws, you know, and the like. And I remember many of the discussions that we had on this program where you had, you know, our guests and our callers, their attitudes were nothing is going to prevent them, you know, from exercising, you know, their right to vote. But the reality is that even with less restrictive voting rights, there are still, you know, black and brown people in this country that are hamstrung in trying to, you know, get, you know, exercise their right at the polls. And these kind of, you know, proposed, you know, changes that we are seeing in places like, you know, Arizona, like you said, in Georgia and other places, would make it even, you know, even more difficult, particularly with the, you know, the mail-in ballots. It was successful, and I say it was successful in Maryland, and not because Maryland went, for Joe Biden, but because it allowed access.
Right.
And I guess the thing that I'm often confused about is limiting access limits access for everyone. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, it's some of many Republican voters use the mail-in. And also, the big part is they're saying it's because of election integrity. But, of course, it was found that there was really voter fraud is not a problem. So it's a law in search of a problem that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, the COVID vaccine issues. There have been many things that have popped up over the past week or so. President Biden, you know, announcing halfway to the goal of 100 million vaccines in 100 days. He announced some 50 million. We've got Johnson & Johnson cropping up. But, Eva, we are still seeing difficulty with access. It is still an imperfect process. How do you see this, where we are right now with COVID-19?
Well, we've got a situation where vaccine demand is outstripping supply. There are issues with people understanding how to register, crashing websites. And the administration is basically just saying this is going to take some time. There are going to be logistical challenges off the bat because we have never tried to respond to a crisis of this magnitude before. So we will see how the rollout will continue, but they're confident enough to say that by May, the vaccine doses will be available to all Americans. They said available, but not necessarily disseminated by then or distributed by then. But that they will be available, but they're sort of saying these are the natural kinks that will happen when you take on an endeavor of this magnitude.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on where we are right now?
I mean, they say that they're top 2 million a day for the first time today, I think this week, and yes, but you do see some of the states opening up, and some people say that is premature, and who's going to be dealing with a lot of the essential workers, and you still do see black and brown folks, minorities who have the essential jobs, really disproportionately affected. And, you know, until they go and take these vaccines where the people are, it'll still be more of a challenge. I mean, I had my first dose, and I wasn't supposed to get them until the end of April, but my insurer said, if you can get to this place today, and it was an hour away, and I had transportation, and I realized not everybody can do that. And
mm-hmm.
So we do have to find a way to make sure that everyone can get it, and it is done in a fair and equitable way.
I don't think the president was as kind when he earlier today when he was talking about Texas and Mississippi. You know, he was talking about Neanderthal thinking in opening up. And I will say, when Texas first made that announcement, a feeling of dread came over me, because from the very beginning, Texas has always been, you know, near the top with its COVID-19 problems, whether it was infections, deaths, hospitalizations, difficulty in enforcing mask mandates, just the whole bit. And now Texas, once again, you know, being, you know, the big state that it is, going big with this kind of thing. And then Mississippi, Alabama announcing today an extension of the mask mandate for another month. But then they're going to cut it out next month. And one of the other things that Either one of you two ladies planning on getting married anytime soon? Because if so, you can go to New Jersey now and you can invite 150 people. So in all of these, we've made so much progress, and it gives me a bit of dread, Eva.
I mean, it gives you a sense of the political pressure that these governors are facing. Texas recently had very severe weather, perhaps the governor responding to the failures in responding to that issue with now reopening so quickly. But also you mentioned New Jersey, a Democratic governor that many would argue was very strict with lockdowns for a long time. But there is a political pressure. There is COVID fatigue among their constituencies, and that's why we're seeing some of these decisions being made.
I think you make an excellent point. I would argue that all of us have COVID fatigue, but you know, I'm also, you know, tired of seeing people die.
Yeah. And I do agree mm-hmm. with Eva, though. I think that Texas Governor Greg Abbott was trying to change the headlines kind of cynically after the terrible job so many leaders did with the storm.
Yeah. yeah, but in Mississippi, there are still people who are without water because that storm did not just obviously impact Texas. In Jackson, you know, 200,000 people still without water. It's been 2 weeks, and so you can change the headline literally for a minute until you realize that you were still parched.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I had somebody on the ground in Houston on my podcast, Equal Time, talking about some of those issues. And this week I do have Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, who of the Virgin Islands, who we saw such a star in the impeachment hearings, talking about many of these issues.
Yes, yes, definitely a rising star in Democratic politics.
Oh yeah, even quoted some hip hop lyrics, but that's another thing.
Well, she's from that era. Now we're at the point where hip hop is not just something the young folks do, it's classic.
I know.
so we have it all. Isn't that right, Eva? So Eva said, I'll stick to the house music. But but one of the stars that seems to be fading a little bit is Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York. He had already had problems as it related to the nursing home death figures as a result of COVID. But these sexual harassment allegations from the one woman, three. And who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. It's becoming messy.
It sure is. We heard from him publicly for the first time this week since these allegations emerged. He said he was embarrassed. He tried to be contrite, saying that he was sorry that he made people feel uncomfortable, but that was as far as he was going to go. He didn't admit that any of his actions were inappropriate or rose to the level of harassment or assault. Even if he did kind of concede that he felt sorry that other people took it that way. I think the issue is that the governor has long had a reputation for being a bully, and that this is all now bubbling to the surface, and that so it's hard maybe for especially those who have had to interact with him to watch this now and feel as though this public display of contrition is authentic. And it was very bold of him the pandemic wasn't even over, to go out on this victory lap, take this victory lap with this book about his response to the virus. And now that he has found himself on the other side of things, not receiving this public praise, I would say that people who have already had a bone to pick with him are looking at him very suspiciously and feel as though that these women should be heard. I mean, that's what Democrats have said for a long time, right? All women should be heard. Trust women. every allegation is credible. So now that he's being accused, now those same standards have to apply for him.
We've come a long way since the Access Hollywood bus tape, Mary, and with former President Trump and grabbing them by the and a little sound effect there. But I wonder, because Joe Biden went through something similar, being, you know, too handsy. Now, and this was, you know, during the campaign, but I just found it, you know, he wasn't accused of sexually harassing women. He was just accused of being overly friendly with his touching, which, of course, then you had women saying that they felt, you know, uncomfortable. That's a far cry from where Cuomo is right now. But, you know, are we getting, you know, to a point where you can't, COVID notwithstanding? Okay, let's do, you know, that you know, everything is serious. Everything is professional. Don't touch me. Don't come near me, man or woman, boss or subordinate. Is the personal touch in a professional setting to be safe? Do we just throw it out the window?
Well, I think people are getting to the point where they are making a distinction that the grabbing women, whatever. I think many Democrats felt that what happened to former Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, that he was pretty much forced out before there was even an investigation, that might have been too much. And Democrats are feeling that they have high standards and they try to stick to them. And it is different because Trump, of course, with all of his comments, and he even has allegations that are still in the courts, people still supported him. Now you have in North Carolina, Senator Richard Burr for voting for impeachment is censured, but not Congressman Madison Cawthorn, who has all of these charges against him now bubbling up. So I think people are looking at them carefully and saying there's a difference between, you know, Harvey Weinstein and Yassine and somebody else. But at the same time, and Cuomo, it's a different case in the sense that he made so many enemies that, of course, people are looking at him now. I mean, obviously, Mayor Bill de Blasio and he have had a feud, so he's certainly going to come and do this. But, you know, I do think you should listen to people and listen to their stories. That is without a doubt, because we all know in the past that so many people got away with things and they said, oh, just kidding, this or that. But, you know, Letitia James, the attorney general, is investigating. It's going to take some time. Maybe we'll see what happens. I guess time will work in Governor Cuomo's favor. He'll probably try to focus on the vaccine and the budget talks and try to rebuild his image. But obviously, people are not afraid of him anymore. As Eva said, folks who kind of admired and or feared him, that is gone. So he has a lot of work to do.
And let me be clear, it's the touching when you don't want to be touched, or you know the kissing. But the thing with Cuomo, there are accusations from Charlotte Bennett, who was an aide to Cuomo, that she said that he was asking her about her sex life and whether or not she had sex with older men. In as we used to say, the line is here, and you were on the other side of the room.
Yeah, they will investigate that for sure, and we will see. But at least these things are getting an airing. And you know, if people say, "Oh, I can't even tell someone they look nice anymore," well, that's ridiculous. Of course, of course you can. I mean, that's don't pretend that you don't know what is inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, know? Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about this, and there could be. What one would hope that there would, you know, constantly be a teachable moment, for not just men, but people in power when it comes to this, because there seemed to be no consequence for former President Trump after the Access Hollywood thing, only because even after his apology, he remained who he has always been, in that bullying mode and in saying unflattering and insulting things about women. So that was not a lesson learned there. And some people could say, well, if the president can get away with it, why should I bother revisiting my comments about women coworkers and the like? And I think we all need to pay attention to this Cuomo thing and remember that if you're not careful, that could be you, and you could lose your job.
Well, I have a son who's in the work world, and I just am really hopeful I raised him well.
I know the feeling of, my daughter, who's also in the, newly in the work world, but based on just some of the stories that she's, told me, she ain't got time for that. So I'm very, very, very pleased with how she has handled herself thus far. Mary C. Curtis, Eva McKend, thank you so much for, again, sharing your intellect and your insight on these very important stories. And certainly we will be checking in with you again because, like I said, this is not the end. This is just the end of the beginning. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll have plenty more news.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Okay. Listen to Equal Time.
Equal Time. Don't forget. Hey, when?
It's on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Equal Time with Mary C. Curtis. We have some fun with it.
Without a doubt. Well, thank you so much, both of you. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, March 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.